whispers through my lips, a faint gasp. It can't be her. It can't be Brielle. Denial pulses through my veins. This must be some monster wearing a glamour, a wicked trick, a disguise to trick me. Brielle is a child, a bony little girl not even 12 years old. She isn't a strong, sturdy woman with hunger-sharpened cheekbones and dangerously flashing eyes. Valley! The young woman steps onto the porch, her boot coming down hard. It's me! I tense, my grip on the latch firming, ready to drag the door shut fast. But my gaze shifts from those wide hazel eyes to a spot on her cheek. A tiny brown spot, larger than a freckle, but not by much, shaped vaguely like a tiny heart. Brielle's fairy kiss. No illusion could have mimicked that birthmark so exactly. Brielle? Her name whispers through my numb lips. Brielle, are you real? Yes! The young woman steps back again, her eyes widening still more as she looks at my hand on the latch. Don't shut the door, please. If you shut the door, the whole house will vanish again. I've come upon it 3 times before, but just when I think I've got it for sure, just when I think I'll get through, it escapes me, slithering away sideways into this cursed wood, and I'm left where I started, back on the borders. Her words ring in my ears like the toll of distant bells, heard but unheeded. My heart double times, galloping in my breast. No, I shake my head. No, it can't be. It can't. You're not. Brielle nods, dipping her head as though looking down at her own body, twig thin yet distinctly womanly in shape. I grew up, Valley, she says quietly. You've been gone 8 years now. 8 years? My heart jumps, ready to choke me with shock, with horror. No, that can't be right. I've been here a few weeks at most. But this woman wearing my sister's face, this woman gazing at me with my sister's eyes, shakes her head sadly. Maybe it's felt that way to you, but it's been so much longer. And I've been hunting for you all this time, ever since I caught that glimpse of you 6 months after you'd gone. 6 months? Lord Damaris had brought me the water from the Starglass mere days after I arrived in Orokin. Not 6 months. Then again, I've been living in a different fold of reality all this time. Who can say how the years, days, or even hours passed back in my own world? A bitter taste burns in my mouth. I swallow, and sickness sinks to my gut, settling in a lump. Aralas, Lord Damaris, promised to return me home in a year and a day. He promised. But he never told me that what felt like a year and a day to me would mean many years back in my own world. He never told me I would miss my sisters growing up. Never told me I would not return in time to shield and protect her from our father's cruelties. He never told me. He let me believe. Please. Brielle steps up cautiously. She has a quiver of arrows slung over her shoulder and carries a short bow in one hand. Since when had Brielle taken up carrying weapons on her excursions into the wood? Since her sister was stolen by fey monsters, no doubt. Please let me in. Give me a chance to explain. Her voice cracks, and when I look closer, I see tears shining in her eyes. The sight is so strange in that young woman's face, but also so like Brielle. It's been such a long time, Valley, she says, her voice gentle but edged with tension. I've searched so hard, and I began to think I'd never find you. I've been driven nearly mad with frustration. Please, Valley, If you turn me away now, I don't know what I'll do. My hand trembles on the latch. I feel Ellie and the goblins behind me, watching me. I feel their silent urging for me to slam the door shut, to protect them from possible invasion. But they don't know Brielle. They don't know the way her mouth twists to one side when she's trying hard to speak without crying, without letting her fear betray her. They don't know the way her hairline comes to a little point on her forehead, or how silky, vibrant locks fall to frame her dainty, heart-shaped face. They don't realize how the little girl still manages to peer through the young woman's face, determined and beseeching and brave and terrified all at the same time. They don't know. I step back. "Come in," I say before I can change my mind. "Quickly." Brielle leaps up the steps and through the door, and when I pull it shut behind her, the booming echoes reverberate through the floor and across the spacious hall. Every denizen of the household must know the doors have been opened and shut again. Turning, I press my back against the moldings, my hands behind me still holding the latch. Ellie and the goblins are nowhere to be seen. They've scattered, hiding from the newcomer. But they're probably still close, watching from hidden nooks and crannies. Brielle stands in the middle of the huge hall, turning slowly in place, her neck craning as she takes in the grandeur of that space. It's like nothing she's ever seen before. I vividly remember experiencing the same awe blended with fear when I first arrived at Orokin, not long ago. Or, apparently, years ago. When she finally drops her gaze and looks at me, a smile breaks across her face, transforming her momentarily into the child I know. But when she moves as though to catch me in a hug, I step away, my nerves jumpy, suspicion humming in my veins. My sister, if indeed this is my sister, looks hurt, but puts her hands up and steps back. She looks me up and down. "You look... well," she offers tentatively. I nod. Then, the word blurting out in a rough sort of bark. "Father?" She shrugs. "Still alive. Still drunk. Still hating the world. We lost the house a couple of years back. I got a little place for us on the edge of town. Do you still work for the Trisdy family?" "Gods, no. I gave that up ages ago. I'm a huntswoman now. I bring in fresh game for old Almar to sell at markets. He pays a fair price. We get by." She frowns, her eyes flashing uncomfortably. "What about you?" she asks slowly, as though fearing the answer. "What?" "Mother Ulla told me you were stolen as a fey bride. Are you... that is... have you..." "I'm well," I hasten to assure her. "Lord... the fey who took me needs me to break a curse for him, but he... the marriage is a name only. He's treated me well." Brielle's eyebrow slides up her forehead, and her face sets like stone. "He kidnapped you?" "Yes, I remember." "And this is where he's kept you? All these years?" I shake my head. I feel dizzy, sick inside. It hasn't been that long. Not for me. "The fact remains, he stole you away from your family and locked you up in this gilded cage. Don't try to tell me he's treated you well, Valera Normus. I don't want to hear it." She gives me a once-over. "God, he's not even given you new clothes to wear. Is that the same dress you were wearing the night you were stolen? Or has he glamored you to think it's made of fine silks?" "Oh, no." I look down at my rough work dress, smoothing the front of my skirt. I have new gowns aplenty. I simply find this one more practical." "Practical for what? Are you a servant here? Cleaning? Cooking? Hauling firewood?" I open my mouth, but no words will come. How can I begin to explain? How can I begin to tell Brielle that I've been blissfully filling my days exploring the possibilities of my own creative urges? What would Brielle think if she knew I haven't been pouring every ounce of strength and will I have into escaping this prison, escaping this world, and returning to my beloved little sister? As I should have been. Guilt slashes through my heart like a knife. I should have known better than to relax into this new life, to let my soul settle into these grooves and become comfortable. I believed Lord Damaris, took him at his word. When he said he would return me in a year and a day, when he told me to speak his true name, I'd felt that simmering connection between us and trusted it. When I ought to have resisted, I relented. And now here I stand, faced with the reality of his lie. How many other lies has he told me? How many other falsehoods has he woven in amid his kind words and his silences? Don't worry, Valley. Brielle's voice cuts through the tumult in my mind. Don't try to answer. None of that matters anymore. I'm here now, and I'll take you home. Home? My head jerks up. I meet and hold my sister's gaze, my mind suddenly whirling. Yes. Why else do you think I've come so far? Brielle takes a step toward me, extending her free hand invitingly. I tried so long to get through to you. I can't even begin to tell you all I went through, everything I saw and experienced. I finally learned of this place, and I fought like a demon to reach you. If it hadn't been for... But no. She shakes her head, pinching her lips together, then looks up at me again and offers a small smile. I can tell you all that once we're safely out of this place. For now, we've got to go. Go. Step through that door, hand in hand with my sister. Turn my back to Orokin, to the folk of this house, to the memories of fear and delight, of pain and pleasure, to the hope, however tentative and shrinking, that had begun to bloom in my heart. To leave him, in his darkness, in his shadows, hiding in folds of realities from a darkness deeper still. My husband. My hand moved of its own accord and is already halfway extended toward Brielle's, ready to clasp her fingers tight. I snatch it back, pressing my palm over my racing heart. I can't. There's a curse. A curse? Brielle's voice is sharp, her eyes flashing. On you? No. I swallow and look down before forcing my chin up and making myself hold my sister's gaze. I told you, on Lord Damaris, the master of this house. He and his people suffer under a curse, and I'm supposed to break it. What kind of a curse? I don't know. And who cast it? I don't know. And how are you supposed to break it? I shake my head. Brielle flings up her hands, rolling her eyes toward the painted ceiling overhead. Do you hear yourself, Valley? Do you? This Lord Damaris has manipulated you from the start. He's told you these stories to keep you happy here, to keep you placid. You're probably ensorcelled to make you believe it. But it's me you should believe. No. I grimace. I know how it must sound to her ears. I know I must seem pathetic, weak, a victim, far too easily molded by my abuser. But that isn't the case. It isn't. I know who I am, what I am. I know the experiences I've lived these last few weeks. It isn't all lies. It can't be. Can it? Brielle moves toward me cautiously, her footsteps soft, but her eyes sparking with fire. Don't worry, she says. I'll get you out of this. What are you going to do? I snap, sliding away from the door to put distance between us. Would she try to grab me? Manhandle me through the door and into the forest? She looks strong enough to do it, though she stands several inches shorter than me. Her stance bespeaks strength, agility, and wiry muscle. Brielle puts up a placating hand. It's all right. I know how this works. I've learned a thing or two these last 8 years. I can't drag you away from an enchantment by force. It'll only hurt you. I've got to break the spell before you can come away safely. It's all right, Valley. Look. So saying, she reaches into the satchel at her side and offers me a candle, a red taper of fine beeswax with a long white wick. Though I can't begin to say why, I feel a shudder in my gut. What is that? I ask, my voice sharp in my own ears. It's how you'll break free, Brielle says. You've got to... Well, I don't know exactly how it works or why, but I was told you have to look at this Fey Lord of yours by the light of this candle. The moment you see him by this light, the spell he's cast on you will break, and he will lose all power over you. You'll be able to come away with me then. My heart thuds against my breastbone. Who told you this, Brielle? Who gave you this thing? Someone who knows. Brielle narrows her eyes, her brow puckering. Please, Valley, I can't say more. I might compromise the magic. Mother Allah. It must be. Who else would Brielle turn to for help in matters like this? And Mother Allah fought so hard to prevent the Moonfire marriage from taking place. Granted, she also made clear that if I chose to step through that door and into the marriage agreement, she wouldn't be bothered trying to help me out of it again. Perhaps 8 years has softened her resolve. I stare at that candle, such a bright, bloody red in my sister's pale hand. He told me I could not see him. The words are heavy, like weights falling through my lips. He said the one rule governing our marriage was that I must not look upon his face. Don't you see? Brielle's voice is tight, as though she struggles to keep her own passion tightly reined. That must be how he maintains this spell on you. As long as you don't look at him, you remain in his thrall. You believe his words, believe his lies, and you stay here. But don't worry. This candle is ensorcelled so that Fey eyes cannot see its light. He'll never know that you've used it, that you've seen his face. Oh, Valley. These last words emerge in a choking gasp like a sob. Valley, please believe me. I can't leave you here. I just can't. If I'm wrong, if there is no spell, the candle will reveal that too. Then you can safely believe whatever he's told you. But search your heart. You know he's lying to you. You've got to feel it deep inside, underneath the magic. Is it true? I close my eyes, as if blocking out sight of that candle can thwart the desperate temptation to take it. After all, Lord Damaris has already broken one promise. He said our marriage would last no more than a year and a day. He failed to mention that time's passage differs between the worlds. He lied by omission, but it's still a lie. What other lies and half-truths has he woven into this world he created for me? My lashes part slowly. The candle is still there, offered by my sister's hand, and Brielle gazes at me with desperate, longing entreaty. If there's one person in all the world I know I can trust. Fine. I take the candle. It's cold in my grasp, but I wield it as though brandishing an assassin's dagger. I'll do it. I'll try. Tonight? Brielle urges, her voice still tight, but now tinged with hope. Will you try tonight? Please. I don't know. He's been gone for some time. I don't know when he'll return. It has to be tonight, Valley, she urges. I found a path here, but it won't stay open for long. If you wait any longer, I may not be able to return for a long while. It could be years. I turn my face away, draw a deep breath. I'll do what I can, Brielle. I promise. That's all I ask. Just do what you can. My sister moves forward as though to embrace me, but I jump like a startled doe and edge away, still wary. Immediately, she draws back, her expression placating. There's so much love and longing in her eyes, my heart breaks to see it. Perhaps I ought to toss this candle aside, take Brielle's hand, and just go, now, while I can. But no, I can't do that. If I do, I will always wonder. Clenching my jaw, I squeeze the candle, my fingers warming the hard wax. You've got to go now, Brielle. Is it? Can you get home from here safely? I'll be safe enough, Brielle answers, brandishing her bow. Then her stern expression softens. I'll return in the morning, at daybreak. Wait for me here. The spell should be broken by then without his knowing. I can get you safely away before he realizes you've gone. Once you're back in our world, this marriage bargain of yours will be broken. You'll be safe. Safe, Valley. Her voice breaks again. It's been so long, she whispers. I've been so afraid for you. If I listen to one word more, I won't have the strength to stay. Go on, I say firmly. You can't be here when he returns. I'll use the candle, and I'll see you in the morning. I promise, Brielle. If what you've told me is true, I'll see you in the morning. With this, I open the door, which swings out silently, revealing the deep green shadows of the forest. I wave my hand, indicating Brielle should cross the threshold. My sister, my older little sister, catches my eye sadly as she obeys, stepping out onto the porch. She pulls a green hood up over her bright-colored hair and adjusts the quiver strap slung across her breast. Be careful, she says. You too, I reply. She looks as though she wants to say more. I don't know what, and I'm afraid to guess. She nods once, turns, and strides off into the forest. I stand in the doorway and watch her go until the shadows of whispering wood claim her, obscuring her from view. 26. I conceal the candle in the folds of my skirt as I walk through the halls of Orokin to my bedroom. Once there, I place it in my sewing basket and cover it with scraps of cloth. The sun has scarcely reached its zenith in the sky. A long afternoon lies before me. Eventually, Ellie tiptoes in, her eyes large and uncertain. She offers me food, and when I shake my head, she leaves the platter on the table and slips out again. The goblin men, who often make a point to leap down my chimney and roll around on my hearth, avoid me entirely. Do they think me a traitor for allowing a stranger into their home while the master is away? Perhaps. They don't know Brielle, after all. They would have seen only a strong, mortal woman armed with deadly weapons. But surely they must have seen how I sent her away again. Do they know about the candle? I shudder. Sitting in my chair by the fireplace, I feel as sick to my stomach now as I had in those first terrible days after I came to Orokin. No, I whisper fiercely. My imprisonment. When had I begun painting the scenario in such tame colors? I hadn't simply come to Orokin. I had been spirited away against my will by terrifying creatures who had manipulated me into believing they held my sister captive. Sure, I now know those creatures as Ellie and Bergabog, and all the little host of goblin men. But what difference does that make? Perhaps my comfort with them is simply more proof of the enchantment Brielle claims I'm under. And Lord Damaris. How many lies has he led me to believe simply by not telling me the truth? I lay my necklace of lockets on the table and eye it as though it were a snake ready to bite me. Those beautiful fabrics hidden within each locket. I've been so delighted with them, touched by a gift so carefully selected to be a true pleasure to me, far beyond the pleasure of jewels and gowns and riches. I let myself believe such stupid things, that Lord Damaris cares for me, understands me in a way no one else ever has, and wants to bring joy into my life. I allowed myself to forget the truth. And now, I slowly release a tight breath, closing my eyes. Now what am I going to do? I have one night in which to use this candle, if I really intend to use it. But how? Brielle said it's enchanted so that he can't see the light, but that doesn't mean I can simply light it while sitting across from him at the hearth. He would immediately suspect something. No, it would be better if... I turn in my chair to look back at my bed. My lips are dry, and I pinch them together, trying to moisten them. It might work, I whisper after a few moments of contemplation. It might just work if I'm careful. The day progresses while my mind churns. Ellie doesn't return, for which I am grateful. I eat some of the cold meat on the platter, then step into the bathing chamber. Moving with determined precision, I pour scented soap into the pool, strip and wash myself. I pat my hair dry, comb it, and pin it up in loose coils that fall across my shoulders. Then I return to the room and open my clothing chest. The white gown shimmers and gleams as I shake it out and hold it up before me. How vividly I recall that fevered night following the Glorindal dance, when I donned this gown and waited with bated breath, ready to risk it all, ready to give all, full of hope and fear and desire. That night was nothing like this. Tonight, there is no fever in my veins, only raw determination. I slip into the white gown, wrap it across my bosom, and tie it at my hip. Moving to the mirror, I study my reflection. The girl gazing back at me is hardly the same girl I saw all those weeks, years ago. That girl had been pinched with hunger, wide-eyed with terror, pale and haunted. Now? My frame has filled out and softened after weeks of good food and rest and comfort. Like a fruit ripening on the vine, waiting to be plucked. My eyes narrow. If that is indeed his plan, I'll soon find out. And I'll beat him at his own game, just so long as he abides by his own rules. I adjust the gown's plunging neckline, pulling it slightly apart to reveal more soft, plump curves. The fabric is so fine, so light, it leaves little to the imagination. Perhaps it's too much. Perhaps I risk cutting myself on my own weapon. No, it will work. It must work. The room dims around me. The sun is setting. Night swiftly advances. I return to my hearth, sit on the edge of my chair, and grip the arms tight. With a word of command, I call the moonfire to life, and for some time, I watch the tongues of blue flame dance across the glowing stones. Then I close my eyes and whisper, "Aralas, come to me." I wait. How long, I can't say. I keep my eyes closed, breathing carefully, trying to calm my racing heart. I hear the door open, shut again. I hear footsteps cross the room, a rustle of fabric as he approaches. Then he stops abruptly. He's seen me, seen what I wear. I feel his gaze devouring me. My heartbeat quickens, but I don't open my eyes. "M'lady." His voice is soft, not the deep, rumbling tones I've come to know so well. It sounds almost like a prayer, full of hope. Is it just another manipulation? Another fey ruse? "M'lord," I answer, my voice equally soft. I dare not raise it for fear a tremor will betray me. I hardly dare open my eyes, hardly dare lift my gaze to the shadow standing just beyond the moonfire light. Will he read my plan? the deceit in my gaze? Will he know at once what I intend to do? I can almost feel a pulsing energy radiate from my work basket where the candle lies hidden, but I refuse to let my gaze shift that way. "You've been gone some while," I say at last, breaking the silence between us.
"I..."
He stops. Is that fear I hear in his tone?
"I thought it best,"
he continues with an effort.
"I didn't want you to. I don't want you ever to feel as though..."
He stops again. Then, even softer, almost a whisper.
"Valera."
My heart jolts painfully as that line of connection flares to life between us, sharp as a razor wire, but vibrating like the string of an instrument sounding a pure, clear note. I close my eyes, resisting the lure of that note, resisting all the feelings it calls to life in my body. I must be careful, so careful now. I stand. The soft skirt of the white garment clings to my hips, and the firelight shines through it, rendering the fabric semi-transparent, I suspect. Moving slowly despite the wild beat of my heart, I step toward him, first one step, then another. I stretch out my hand. At first, he doesn't move. I hear his breathing, heavy in the darkness. Then he shifts his weight, leaning toward me. I feel cool fingertips brush mine and the barest trace of long, sharp nails.
"Aralas,"
I say,
"will you sleep with me tonight?"
A powerful surge like a bolt of lightning seems to shoot through his arm and into me, making me quake to my core.
"Are you..."
His fingers close around mine, drawing me toward him.
"Valera, are you asking me for the fourth kiss?"
My body trembles so hard. I know he must feel it. But I can't let him see my fear, or any of the other wild emotions currently churning through my soul.
"No,"
I answer softly. "I mean only for you to sleep. In my bed. I want for us to lie side by side, as though we are truly man and wife."
"But I am..."
His voice breaks. He tries again.
"I am not to touch you."
I shake my head, dropping my gaze.
"Why do you want this, Valera? Why do you ask this of me?"
Oh, how narrow the bridge and how wide the chasm over which I now tread. One wrong look, one wrong word, and I'll betray myself entirely. But what would I betray? My plan to light the candle, to lean over his sleeping body, to see his face and break his spell? Or the truth of what I desire with my whole body and soul? I speak with care each word I precisely practiced in my mind throughout the long afternoon. "I want to know I am safe with you. If I choose to ask for the final kiss, I want to know I will not, with that choice, give up everything. If you lie with me tonight, it is a sign of trust between us." Once more, I lift my eyes to search in the shadows for some hint of his face. But there is none, only darkness, a perfect obscuring mask. "Do you agree, Aralas?" I ask. "Will you sleep in my bed tonight? Will you honor my trust?" His hold on my hand does not relax. I hear him draw a long, deep breath. Perhaps I should not have worn the white gown. It's too great a temptation. But I want him to know, I want him to believe, that if he grants me this request, the fourth kiss must and will come thereafter. Will he lower his guard as he lies beside me? Will he fall asleep? Or have I pushed too far? Pushed him beyond the limits of self-control so that he will yield to his darker urges and take that fourth kiss by force? Long hours of night stretch before us, Anything might happen in that time.
I want you to trust me, Valera,
he says. The heartstring hums a sharp, painful note that almost makes me gasp out loud. He means it. I feel the sincerity in his words.
I would do anything to prove to you how greatly I honor and esteem you.
He stops abruptly. Then, in a firm tone, he finishes with,
I will do as you ask. I will lie beside you. And I will not touch you, save at your asking.
The next few moments pass as though in a dream. I draw him away from the fire, even as I have imagined doing more times than I like to admit. I lead him into the deeper shadows, where not even the faintest glint of moonfire can penetrate. Knowing the layout of my room well, I do not hesitate. But when we approach the bed, I pause. It's so high, and I don't like to scramble up into it like I normally do. Not in this filmy bit of nothing I now wear, with him watching. I turn to him, my eyes still straining in the darkness, though I know it is useless. You may lift me up, I say. Strong hands wrap around my waist. I only just have time to grip his shoulders before he sweeps me off my feet and sets me lightly on the edge of the bed, as though I weigh no more than a doll. For a moment, we stay like that, facing one another. The touch of his hand seems to burn through the thin gown right into my skin. His shoulders are firm beneath the silken garment he wears. A strong temptation comes over me to find the edges of that garment, to push it back from his shoulders and let it fall down his arms to pool on the floor, to feel the smooth skin and hard muscle my fingers explored with such interest only a few nights ago. I bite down hard on my lower lip. It's too dangerous. Much too dangerous. I don't trust myself. Come, I say, letting go and swinging my legs up to curve beside me. Join me. He moves around to the other side of the bed. I feel the change of pressure in the down-filled mattress as he sits. He remains seated, invisible but so powerfully present. He does not relax. But it's not as though I've relaxed either. I recline onto the pillows on top of the fur coverlet. Lying on my side, my legs slightly curled, I still try, despite everything, to see in the darkness. It's all right, I say, though my voice quavers traitorously. Please, lie beside me. He shifts onto the bed. I feel the weight of him in the mattress. His legs extend all the way to the footboard, his head resting on another pile of pillows. The bed is large enough that we could lie side by side without touching throughout the night. That should be plenty. That should be enough. And yet, I move slightly, stop. Then, giving in to an impulse I hardly dare name, I slide close to the warm bulk beside me. He holds still as a stone, but when I reach out and touch his arm, he jolts. His skin is pleasantly warm.
Valera,
he breathes. Yes? He doesn't say anything more. After a few moments, I move my hand up his arm to his shoulder, then slide it softly down his chest. Just as I did 4 nights ago, I feel his heart thud against my palm. So fast, so frantic. Is this the quickening pulse of the hunter preparing for the kill? Why can't I make myself believe it? Slowly, timidly, I shift closer until I can rest my cheek against his shoulder. It feels right, somehow, though not as right as it should. Would you lift your arm? I ask, amazed at my own boldness. He grunts. Then obediently he raises his arm. I squirm to his side, pressing up against him. His arm comes down around me, cradling me close, and I rest my head on his shoulder, my cheek touching both smooth silk and warm skin. I close my eyes, no longer straining against pure blindness. My heart thuds in my breast. Can he feel it? Can he guess what I feel? No, that's ridiculous. How could he guess when I'm not sure myself? My hand resting on his heart moves slightly. My fingertips dance along his skin, exploring the muscles of his chest. He shivers.
Valera.
Yes?
Please, let me kiss you.
Heat flames through my body. Every sense begs me to give in. Nay, to beg him for that kiss. I long to feel his lips on mine, long to feel his strong hands on my trembling body. I squeeze my eyes tight, desire warring with reason, hunger warring with fear. I slide my hand down his chest until I feel his other hand resting on his stomach. There I let my fingers rest a moment, even while my mind burns. I should let him go, should push away from him and retreat to the far side of the bed. I shouldn't play with fire. Instead, I take hold of his hand and, moving by instinct rather than rational thought, pull it toward my breast. I press his palm to my heart. His breathing quickens. I continue drawing his hand down the deep V of my gown. His fingertips trail fire across my skin, and I catch a short, shivering gasp. My eyes flare open, searching the darkness. I can feel his gaze on me, but the shadows are too deep for my eyes to discern even the faintest glimmer of his eyes. Yet I feel the intensity of his study. His face sight can see me with perfect clarity. I lower my lashes.
Valera.
Hush. He starts to withdraw his hand, but I tighten my hold, just slightly, just enough to make him stay, to leave his fingers where they are. My heart rams in my chest, and I know he can feel it. His hand tenses, relaxes, tenses again. Then, moving with care, he slides one long finger along the inside edge of my garment, up from my breast to my shoulder. He slips the soft fabric gently down my arm, exposing my shoulder. Cold air touches my bare skin, causing little hairs to prickle. He pauses again. I hear the tightness of his breathing. My stomach knots. I leave my hand lightly on top of his, neither guiding nor pushing away, simply waiting. As though summoning courage, he continues. Slowly, delicately, he draws one fingertip along my shoulder, across my collarbone. The edge of a claw delicately touches my throat. I bite my lip, trying not to let a sound betray me, but cannot restrain a tiny whimper. His fingers wander down my breastbone and come to a rest above my heart to trace a circle there. Then, with a sudden growl, he rolls on top of me, his knee braced beside my hip bone, his hands pressed into the furs on either side of my face. My heart leaps, not with fear, but with an excitement equally heady and thrilling. He lowers himself, his muscled torso pressing against my bosom. His breath warms my shoulder, and I can almost feel the shape of his lips hovering just above my skin. He turns his head, and my neck sparks in response to a touch that does not happen. My eyelashes flutter. I'm not sure I'll ever catch my breath.
Valera,
he says. His voice is almost a command. I look up. I can't see him, but I can feel him. His face is near. Mere fractions of an inch separate his lips from mine. I close my eyes again. The precipice yawns before me. I stand on the brink, and one more half step will send me falling, falling, down into the mystery, down to discover either delight or terror. I can hardly fathom which. If he would only bend a tiny bit more, Plant his lips against mine, take the moment of decision away entirely. Does he know how weak I am? How my blood races, how my skin burns with anticipation? Does he know how easily I would succumb? But he remains poised where he is, his breathing ragged.
Valera, he rasps, may I kiss you?
If I give in, if I indulge in the desires even now coursing through my veins, will I still have the will to pull out the red candle when we're through and lie spent upon our pillows? Will I be able to steal a secret glimpse of my shadowy bridegroom then? Or will the power Brielle insists he has over me only be strengthened, transforming me into his witless, devoted slave? I cannot risk it. No, I whisper, squeezing my eyes tightly shut and tucking my chin in. I put up one hand and plant it against his bare, heaving chest. No, you may not kiss me. I apply a little pressure, and for a moment, feel his resistance. Then, with a groan, he shifts and falls back heavily onto the bed. 27. I see the shadow of his hand move to his face, as though covering his eyes. I shiver and slip the sleeve of my gown back onto my shoulder, adjusting the front across my bosom. I hold very still on my side, straining my eyes to make something of the indistinct form beside me, my hands clasped tightly against my throbbing heart. After what feels like an age, he speaks again.
Let me go. You're too kind to torment me.
A dart of pain shoots through my heart, but I shake my head fiercely, squeezing my fingers tight. No, stay, please. He is silent again for the space of several breaths. Then, in a softer voice,
this is what you need from me, to feel safe.
This is what I need, Aralos.
Very well, I will stay.
How long we lie like so, I cannot guess. Neither of us moves, neither of us speaks, and the cord of connection between us strains tight, ready to sing out if plucked. I close my eyes. Gods curse my weakness. I'd meant to simply lie here beside him until sleep claimed him. The bed is big enough. We need not have touched at all. I shouldn't have indulged myself so foolishly. Did I push him too far? Will he not be able to fall asleep now? Have I spoiled my chance? After what feels like hours, my muscles relax. I sense the tension going out of him as well. The sound of his ragged breathing eases into a more regular rhythm. Setting my jaw, I fight the urge to slide up against him again. It had felt so lovely to be held in his arms, so right. But if once I let him pull me close again, I won't have the strength to resist what will surely follow. I must be firm. I must remember what I have learned today, that he misled me about the passage of time in my own world, that he never told me the truth of my sister's aging, that his promises to return me home after a year and a day were worthless. That he may even now have me under a spell. And all those sensations I experienced here in this bed were mere products of his dark enchantments. Time passes with painful slowness. I doze at last, but come to myself with a start, blinking and blind. The moon fire has gone out on the hearth, leaving the room in perfect darkness. Beside me, my husband sleeps as well, his breathing deep and steady. Moving slowly, I sit upright. He doesn't stir. His sleep is sound, apparently. Thank the gods. I shift my weight away from him and slide off the far edge of the bed. My scanty garment pulls as I go, exposing my bare skin to the cold air. Hastily, I grab the skirt and front, yanking them into proper place. Then, walking on the balls of my feet, I cross to the work table. I know this room well, after all. I can find my way in the dark as long as I don't let fear drive me to hurry. I must be slow, precise. My fingers find the work basket. Reach inside. Touch the candle. I draw it out and hold it close to my breast, shooting a brief prayer to the heavens. Now, how to light it? It isn't like moonfire that will spring into being on my command. And will moonfire be enough to set flame to this wick? I crouch on my hearth and quietly speak a small moonfire blaze to life, though it is scarcely more than a single flame dancing on a small white stone. It seems terribly bright after that absolute darkness. I shudder and glance over my shoulder at the bed. I can just discern the form of my husband lying there, but he hasn't moved, and the sound of his deep breathing continues to fill the stillness. My hand trembles so hard, I fear I will drop the candle. I hold the long white wick to the moonfire. It sparks and takes. When I withdraw the candle and hold it up before me, it glows at first with bright green light, and a bitter smell sears into my nostrils. However, after a few faint flickers, the green fades, giving way to a soft orange flame. The smell is gone, too. Vanished so completely, I'm not sure it was ever real. Right, I whisper. Slowly, cautiously, I rise from my knees and approach the bed. With each step I take, my fear grows. It isn't too late. Not yet. I can still blow out this candle, stash it back in the basket, and climb into bed beside my husband. I can still wake him, ask for his kiss, and risk everything on the chance that a night with him will be enough to break his curse. If his curse is even real. This final thought sears across my brain like a scalding iron. I won't fall prey to fey tricks. Whatever happens, I must know the truth. I must know if he has ensorcelled me. I may not trust him, but I do trust Brielle. My sister wants what is best for me. I must believe that. I approach the bed. I lift my candle and lean over to look at my husband. He is incredibly beautiful and very strange. He lies in an attitude of repose, his lips lightly parted so that the light of my candle glints off points of deadly sharp teeth. But those lips are full and sensual, and though the planes of his face are harsh, they are like firmly drawn strokes from a master artist's hand, perfectly aligned, confidently shaded. He wears a garment of deep red trimmed in gold, open from throat to navel, revealing the powerfully muscled torso I have twice now explored with my hands. His skin is a deep, dusky gray that seems almost lavender in the candlelight, and the hand resting on his stomach is tipped with long black nails that gleam like polished steel. Two curling horns grow from his brow. Devil horns. And yet he does not look like a devil. I stand tense, poised, waiting. Will there be some electrifying burst as the spell breaks? Or has it already broken, and I don't realize it? Am I suddenly free of his thrall? No. It must not have worked. Why else do I feel this sudden, powerful urge to lean down, to plant my lips gently against his, to wake him with a fourth kiss, to see those long lashes fanning his cheeks flutter open so that I might discover the color of his eyes? Maybe. I bend my head. My candle tilts just slightly, Three drops of hot wax land on his cheek like spots of blood. His eyes flare wide, and I stare down into an intense yellow gaze set with hugely dilated black pupils, like a cat's. Those pupils contract under the glow of the candlelight into pinpoint dots. "Valera," he gasps. His sharp teeth flash. With a cry, he bolts upright, his arm lashing out to knock the candle from my hand. I can't suppress a scream at the suddenness of the gesture, and the candle hits the floor. The orange glow snuffed out at once, and a bitter smell permeates the chamber as I'm plunged into darkness. I stagger back from the bed, trip on the edge of my gown, and fall to the floor. My skirts splay out around my bare legs. I am awkward, terrified, exposed, vulnerable. I hear him rise from the bed.
"What have you done?"
His voice is low, but rises in a ragged, wordless cry before turning to a blood-curdling roar.
"What have you done?"
28. I cower back, throwing up my arms in defense. But though I'm braced and trembling, no violent assault comes. Instead, a sound like a sob breaks the darkness. It doesn't come from my lips.
"I warned you."
His voice cracks, and he struggles to catch his breath.
"I warned you that you must not see my face. Valera. Valera, my love. Why could you not trust me? Why? Why?"
I try to crawl, to put distance between us, but my feet catch in my skirts, pinning me in place. I collapse hard on my elbows, staring up into impenetrable shadow. His voice reaches out to me again, softer now, almost gentle.
"Oh, my love, do you fear me still? Was there nothing I could have done to win your trust? I was such a fool. I thought one mistake could be overcome. I thought you would forgive me for bringing you here, if I could only. But it's too late. It's too late now. She's coming for me."
"Who is coming?" I gasp. Another horrible sob racks the darkness. He moves. I can't see him, and my heart thunders in my breast. My body flinches in expectation of I know not what form of punishment. Then he speaks again.
"Fuck. It's her magic. I smell it. Impossible to miss that stench. Where did you come by this candle spell? How did it get through Orokin's defenses?"
I shake my head. My throat closes, blocking any words, any excuses I might try to offer. How can I tell him the truth? I won't betray Brielle. I feel rather than see him collapse on his knees before me. His hands close on mine, and I wince, trying to pull away, terror throbbing in my veins. But his voice, ragged with pain, reaches out to me like a caress.
"It's not your fault, Valera. I know it isn't. The Pale Queen's enchantments are powerful, and she must have used some trickery to deliver this one. I thought my borders were secure, especially after you managed to ward off her previous attack. But she is insidious. She must have done something."
A terrible crash cuts off his words. A roar like an avalanche bringing down a mountain. The ground beneath me quakes, shuddering into the deeps. I scream, my voice lost in the tumult, and fling my arms over my head as dust and debris rain down from the ceiling. When the reverberations pass, I peer tentatively from under my arm. A huge, solid presence looms over me, warm and sheltering. Aralas. He's using his body as a shield, protecting me from falling stones.
"Valera,"
his words shatter in my ear.
"Are you all right?"
I nod, uncertain whether he can see me in the swirl of dust and darkness.
"Good,"
he breathes. Then one of his hands supports my elbow, the other grips my waist.
Though I'm trembling so hard I fear my knees will buckle, he helps me to my feet, holding me against him.
"There's no time to lose," he says. "She's here, and I can't let her find you. Quickly, my love. Do you still have the necklace I gave you?"
"The necklace?" The words fall out, dull and stupid. My mind whirls, and I can't seem to pull together a coherent thought. Somehow, I manage to say, "It was on the table." He springs to my workstation. The small moonfire blaze I call to light on the hearth still glows through the choking dust clouds, and I can just see his silhouette. A falling stone from the ceiling knocked the table over, scattering its contents, but he quickly sifts through them, then straightens, his hand fisted and upraised. The seven lockets glint in the blue light. He turns to me, and I see his hand outstretched.
"Please, Valera," he says. "I know you've never fully trusted me, never had reason to. Trust me now. All is lost for me and my people, but I have one desire remaining, to see you safe. If I can get you out of Orokin before she gets here..."
"Who gets here?" I demand, my voice choking, my throat coated with dust. My gaze shifts from his hand to the darkness where his face must be, and back again.
"Who is coming, and why?"
He shakes his head.
"I can't explain. The curse."
Another crash erupts in my ears. The walls groan, the ceiling shudders, and the floor shivers and shakes so hard that I stagger. My limbs flail wildly, but then I hit something solid, something warm. Aralas's arms close around me, pulling me tightly to him as he bows over me, making himself into my armor. Through the din of crunching rock, I hear the impact of stone striking flesh. He grunts with pain, his mouth close to my ear. When the worst of the shock passes, he whispers,
"Come to the gardens, quickly."
He steps back from me, and I almost whimper in my longing to return to the shelter of his embrace. One of his great hands closes around mine, and he pulls me roughly after him. I stagger over fallen slabs of stone, broken pieces of my own bed, and splinters from the chest and the shattered mirror. We reach the wall where the door should be, and he speaks the command to open. For a moment, nothing happens. I fear the spell on the door has broken. Then, with a painful groan, it cracks, breaks, and tears apart to create an opening for us. I can see the walls struggling to maintain support. The whole room will collapse in moments. Aralas grips my hand firmly as he leads me over broken stones through the opening, out into the passage beyond. The windows are cracked, and I see one whole pane shattered. Moonlight streams through the broken place and falls full upon my husband's face. I catch my breath, for the otherness of his features is rendered far more terrifying in fear than when I glimpsed him in repose. His brow is stern and hard over his deep-set eyes,